Hello and welcome to the Teal Time with David Teal podcast. I'm Jonathan Heater and I'm joined by David Teal.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, another week, another wild ACC.
It was. We were in the press box at Miami Virginia Tech and watching the end of Virginia Georgia Tech and NC State Clemson. It's good stuff. Not to mention Bedlam and Penn State, Michigan State.
Well, we'll kind of break from the normal role. We'll talk about all those games, in particular Virginia's bowl eligibility, the win they got over Georgia Tech to get bowl eligibility. But let's go first to Norm and you guys can talk about what happened down at Coral Gables on Saturday night.
Norm, for the second time this season, Virginia Tech has revealed itself, or the opponent has revealed Virginia Tech, as not ready for prime time. Tonight, Miami 28, Hokies 10. I've never seen Hard Rock Stadium, which is the name du jour, that wired. I don't remember many nights in the old Orange Bowl that were quite as electric as tonight. That crowd was fired up, and the Hurricanes played like it. What were your primary observations?
Yeah, you're right about you listeners will have to excuse us if we sound a little haggard here. It's technically 3:20, but it's 2:20 since the clock's just flipped back, so we're working on reserve energy here right now, if there is such a thing. But I think you're right about the atmosphere, and Bud Foster actually said after the game that it was, you know, reminiscent of the 2000 game in the old Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Mike Vick going down there in his sophomore year, and that was the game that Andre Davis was out.
And Michael didn't play either.
That's right. And, well, did he not play at all, or did he play in, like, the first quarter and then left? I thought he played and then couldn't go, and Dave Meyer took him the rest of the way. I can't remember exactly how that went, but yeah, it was. It was a crazy atmosphere and loud, and fans were actually into the game as opposed to just, you know, out boozing and having a good time.
There was plenty of boozing and having a good time.
As we walked through on the way to the game, which was really hard to walk through and continue into the stadium because they were having a good time, that's for sure. But this is, you know, like you said, it's the second time that they've been proven not ready for prime time, and both of those teams had good pass rushes, you know, Clemson did. And tonight, Miami had four sacks and probably could have eight, you know.
A lot of pressure on Josh Jackson.
Yeah, if not for Jackson scrambling around and getting away from some people and really being forced into some bad throws. And he made a couple other bad throws on his own, too. And Parker Osterloh kind of filling in for Josh Neidman there at left tackle. Osterloh, the War Hill High graduate, looked horrible. I mean, he was just getting his lunch eaten by their defensive ends, Miami's defensive ends. And and frankly, they weren't great defensively either. I mean, they gave up six plays total, I think, of 20-plus yards.
Yeah, I think it was five of 36 or more.
36-plus, yeah. So they didn't look great there. And it was not a night to remember for Tech.
Well, the combined record of the two teams the Hokies have lost to, Clemson and Miami, is 16-1.
Mm-hmm.
Those two pretty fair football teams that Tech has lost to. But I just think it's clear that they are not top 10 or top 15 caliber. I know that upsets the base, so to speak. But to put it in context, you know, Justin Fuente inherited a program that hadn't won more than eight games in a season since 2011.
It was true.
And he went 10-4 last year, and he's 7-2 this season. That's That ain't half bad.
And it's not like he's controlling the schedule. I mean, he came in with these games set in place.
Right. And it's not like he had much control over the talent.
Right, exactly. Yeah, true. I mean, and I know there are fans, and we saw a lot of the vitriol tonight on Twitter to a level I have not seen in quite some time, maybe ever. And I get it. I know it's frustrating because, you know, a lot of fans expected Tech to come down here and, you know, either A, play a whole lot better than they did, or B, win, you know. Yeah. And now, in his two, you know, little over a season and a half in Blacksburg, you know, Fuente's lost, he's winless in three games against top 10 opponents. But, you know, I mean, it's a pretty good team. I mean, he's the reigning national champion last year in Clemson, and
yep.
And then Clemson again this year, and appears poised to perhaps have a shot at defending that championship. You know, we'll see. And then a pretty good, you know, a pretty good Miami team, a team that you know, I think a lot of us felt was overrated because they had played so many teams so close, the four straight wins, each by 8 points or less in the ACC competition against mostly unimpressive competition. And then tonight they come in and beat what is a good Tech team by 18 points. And so I know that's all frustrating and all, but yeah, it's like you said, I mean, this is a work in progress, and that is a really frustrating term probably for Tech fans, but this is still something that they are building here, and Fuente's building, and you know, unless he bails for Florida or something crazy like that, which I have not gotten any vibe that that's going to happen, the process will continue.
Yeah. I mean, I thought there were two key sequences tonight, if there can be in a one-sided game. And the first was there in the opening half when Tech had a chance to cut the lead to 14-10 there before halftime. And Savoy had the ball, you know, little bubble screen there, a little inside pass.
Yep.
And Jaquan Johnson just put, you know, hat on the ball.
Yep.
And turnover in the red zone. Yep. And then the other key sequence was, with the Reggie Floyd late hit. On Rozier. And then literally the next play.
Yeah.
Missed tackle on the big tight end, and it's 21-10.
Yep. 21-10, and they go on attack on another touchdown, and Jackson commits a couple turnovers there in the fourth quarter, and they really can't get much going. It's, you know, they got something going in that last drive, actually, but
yeah,
kind of out of range by that point. So and then he got picked off at the goal line, but the Floyd, I mean, that. The Floyd situation had to be really tough to swallow for Tech just because of the fact that, I'm in agreement about the fact that if that's the interpretation of what's going on there, that, you know, yeah, there's a ball fake, but he's still the quarterback, and you know, you can't hit the defenseless guy, is roughing and all that stuff, and that's tough, man. Something needs to be done about the interpretation of that rule if that's the case. I mean. Because it's like Ricky Walker said tonight after the game. He'd been a runner the whole game, and then all of a sudden he hands off to Homer and executes a play fake, and all of a sudden they're not supposed to hit him when they have been hitting him all game long as a runner? I don't know. It just seems odd that there would be that kind of interpretation, and it was a bad call. And to his credit, Bud Foster, who may have sensed that Whit Babcock was either in the room or had just left. I think he had just left when Fuente left. Restrained himself and took the high road and said he's not going to talk about the call when I asked him about it. So
yeah, and if you're wondering what the difference would have been, Miami would have had 3rd and 7 on its own 42. Instead, with the personal foul penalty, has 1st and 10 on Tech's 43, and then boom. Hits the touchdown to Herndon, and at that point you just thought, yeah, okay, There's plenty of time, but I didn't think the Hokies had a chance at that point.
Yeah, not at that. That was kind of, I mean, that's kind of the...
That's mid-third quarter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Floyd. And because of what had transpired earlier in the half, when Tech forced a couple turnovers on Miami's first two possessions of the half.
Yeah.
And then they get a touchdown, and they have momentum squarely in their corner. And then it just, like you said, that sequence with Floyd just really took the air out of the balloon, and it was, you know, whatever they were building at that point. Well, then it's back to a double-digit deficit, and it's like all this work that they have done to try to get back into it is for naught. So, you know, and just Josh Jackson talked about that tonight, how frustrating it was, just not being able to get over the hump. And he says he took all the blame and put it on himself, but that's that's a quarterback doing what a quarterback should do. But
I like him. I think
it's a shared responsibility for sure. So,
Well, and now they go back on the road next week to Atlanta. Georgia Tech's dropped two in a row, including earlier today or yesterday, I guess technically, at UVA.
Golly.
40-36. The Cavaliers are 6-3 in bowl eligible. And, oh, by the way, the only team other than Miami that could possibly win the Coastal is?
UVA. Just amazing.
Yeah, UVA. It's not going to happen. Cavaliers would have to run the table. Miami would have to also lose to Pitt. So Miami's going to be in its first ever ACC championship game, most likely against Clemson.
Yeah.
But first, to regress, the Hurricanes got Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Coming in here.
Game day coming in. And
yeah.
Another primetime game, back-to-back weeks, as you were mentioning.
You think that place is well-oiled tonight.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
Yeah.
But now the Hokies have to go, prepare for the option. And
yep, short week. I'm sorry, but the short prep, a week instead of a week and a bye like they have had in previous seasons for.
Yeah, so I think it's a tough assignment and an interesting one, just to see how this bunch bounces back. They have not, if I'm remembering correctly, they have not lost consecutive games under Fuente.
I guess that's true. Yeah, yeah, that's right. I hadn't thought about that, but that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't lost consecutive games. There's a couple things to watch this week leading up to this game. First of all, Josh Jackson's health.
Right.
I mean, he did have the elbow that kind of got bent back the wrong direction on the fumble late in the fourth quarter. And
mm-hmm.
he came in and said it was fine. Said it concerned him and he was worried about it.
Yeah, but he went back in the game.
He went back in the game. He's fine. And then he was also walking around after the game. And I saw it on his left foot, but a walking boot. So something to keep an eye on this week with him. And then, of course, Dallas Alexander, which may or may not be a big deal against the option team.
But he's a really good tackler.
He's a really good tackler, their best tackler among their cornerbacks, and a guy that you probably want in man coverage, out there when they try to do the play-action stuff and sneak mm-hmm. one by him. And, so he's got a left hamstring injury, and that looked bad. I mean, that was
I'll be really surprised if he plays.
If he plays this week, or even maybe the rest of the regular season. Those are the kinds of things where you wonder. I mean,
yes,
could be a 3 or 4 week deal. So we'll see. We don't know. We probably won't get an update on that. But
right. And does Nijman come back?
And Nijman too. Obviously, we saw tonight how big that is, and that's something to watch as well. Like you said, trying to get ready for the option, in a week. And Bud Foster's really good at that,
mm-hmm.
He's better than most.
Yep.
Again, there was the question, and I'll probably write about it for Monday, if not early this week, about motivation, after tonight's loss and how motivated the guys are. And they all made the right noises after the game about, not thinking about the division title anymore. It's just time to move on and see what bowl we can get to and try to focus on the here and now. So an interesting week for sure, even though the division title is out of the question now.
Yeah. Well, and I'll throw out one final observation before we wrap this up. I thought last season Tech lost two games it should not have lost, at Syracuse and home against Georgia Tech. This team has not done that.
Yeah.
This team has won every game it should have won, and handily, and it won a coin flip game in the opener against West Virginia.
Yeah.
The next 2 weeks are going to be really interesting. They should beat Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
They're better than Georgia Tech. And they should beat Pitt the following week at home because they're better than Pitt.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they should beat Virginia because that's a rivalry game. That's going to be on the road. That's going to be a whole...
UVA's got a whole ton of confidence right now.
Yeah, and that's going to be a whole different dynamic. Although, you know, the Cavaliers could easily be coming in on their own two-game schneid there if they lose at Louisville and at Miami. They've got a rough couple weeks. But Tech has won every game it should have this season. And if it can continue that, then it's going to be one heck of a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and to have, you know, if they can continue that, get to 10 wins, you know, and, you know, got back-to-back 10-win seasons again, you know, since the first time since 2010, 2011.
So, yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, and that's, you know, it's not what, and I understand that there are a lot of sore Tech fans out there that have jumped off the Fuente bandwagon for now, at least. But, you know, again, if they do get those three wins, they get to back-to-back 10-win seasons and get to a decent bowl, I mean, I don't know, man. It doesn't seem that horrible to me. You know, in the first two seasons of the Fuente era, you've got a division title and two 10-win seasons. So, again, we'll see what happens. You know, it's a lot of football will be played. And these, like you said, this next week, especially at Georgia Tech, will be interesting to see how they bounce back.
Well, I will see you Friday evening in Atlanta. You will be stopping en route in your college haunt, Athens, GA.
Yeah.
Enjoy, behave.
I will do my best. And the dogs are on the plains next week there with the Auburn game, so I'll probably get the town in a relatively sedate state. We'll see.
Sounds good, man. We'll see you in ATL.
All right.
Okay. We can go back to, you guys obviously just talked about that, but we can go back and talk about that in a little while.
Okay.
The thing we can talk fresh about, a little bit about, is UVA and Georgia Tech. A pretty wild game.
Paul Johnson must have an issue with the weather gods, because this is three games this season that he has essentially played in a monsoon. What's the worst possible weather for an option team? Wet. And he's 0-3.
Yeah.
Miami, Clemson, and now UVA, all on the road. I mean, he's just got to be looking up going, what did I do to irritate y'all?
I don't think the weather probably helps against Clemson if it's nice. But with the other two games, I mean,
there. It puts the ball on the ground, which is always Georgia Tech's kryptonite. And that, in large measure, is what happened on Saturday at Virginia. I mean, all that said, Georgia Tech's in position to win the game and can't get a stop. And hats off to Virginia and Kurt Benkert for going down the field. You can't throw a better pass than Benkert did to Andre Lavroni for the game-winning touchdown. I mean, that's back shoulder, left corner of the end zone. I mean, it is perfect right there. I mean, it was decent coverage.
Yeah, 260 yards and three touchdowns and some sloppy weather for Benkert. But I think...
With a pick six, though.
With a pick six. And then... Okay, so I want to talk about what I think is really impressive, two impressive moments for the Cavaliers, because they've just come off two beatings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these games weren't close. You know, they had bowl eligibility right there to grasp.
Against BC and Pitt.
And they got run off the field both times, right?
Yep.
So, start of the second half, they're down one. Taquan Marshall has like a 78-yard touchdown run. The very next play, Bruce Jordan Swilling,
yep.
Pick six. So Swilling, obviously a prominent name in Georgia Tech lore.
Pat.
And Ken.
Yeah.
And so you go from being down one to 15 in 30 seconds or so. That is a pack up the tent and quit moment.
Norm and I were in the car on the way to the stadium in Miami, and I'm following the game on my phone, and he's driving. And I said, dude, it's 28-13 like that. I said, how did that happen? So I'm scrambling on the app to figure out how Georgia Tech scored, and we're both like, they're done. But then almost just as quickly, that game's 28-28. So good on them. I'm not sure where they summoned that from, but somehow Bronco Mendenhall and his staff instilled in them some confidence despite the two-game losing streak, and they came storming back to take the lead.
Well, then, 9-play, 90-yard touchdown drive by Georgia Tech. At the end of the game, 3 minutes left or so, Marshall plays pretty well on that drive, finds Ricky June for a touchdown.
Yep, little play action.
And they go up. And so there you go again. You know, he backs against the wall. We've had this bad stretch. You know, it's time to quit. And
yeah. But there was a lot of time.
There
left.
Was. But the way things have gone for Virginia over the past few weeks, the trouble, the struggles they've had on offense, you know, and the weather, that's a hell of an effort to bounce back like that multiple times in that game.
Oh, you are preaching to the choir. No, very impressive and a terrific springboard into Saturday at Louisville.
Well, you know, this is we talk about it every week, such a wild conference. It's, they've got things in front of them, and you wrote about it in your column this week, right? They have Louisville, they have Miami, they have Virginia Tech.
It's not going to happen. Let's
right.
But if Virginia were to win those three, and Miami was to lose at Pittsburgh the last weekend of the regular season, say hello to your Coastal Division champion Cavaliers. Otherwise, and the otherwise is what will transpire. Miami will play in its first ACC championship game. But no, Virginia has a lot in front of it. And I think especially this week and then in the regular season finale against Virginia Tech because of the 13-game losing streak. But hey, a much better Louisville team than this one, playing a much poorer Virginia team than this one, was lucky to get out of Scott Stadium last year. Lamar Jackson threw a touchdown pass with 13 seconds to go to win that game. And Louisville has struggled against Virginia since joining the league. Virginia has beaten them once, and then the other two games were decided by a touchdown. So Virginia is certainly not going to be intimidated on Saturday. And I wonder about Louisville's motivation at this point. I guess it's bowl eligibility, but certainly not playing very well. Now, they've had a week off since the Wake Forest beating. Maybe they get their head straight, but that defense is a mess, and I think Virginia will figure out a way to exploit it.
So you think they win?
I do.
At Louisville. Yeah, the Louisville's a 11.5 point favorite, which is a ridiculous number for a team that has played how Louisville's played this year.
Louisville has not beaten a team with a winning record this season.
I would certainly take Virginia. I don't know if I'd take them straight up, but 12, they're not losing. I don't think they're losing by 12 points.
Unless they
just completely lose control of Lamar Jackson.
Correct.
But, you know, look, Mike Kaiser had 18 tackles on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, I know the offense lends itself to a lot of tackles.
It does. That option, and they're gonna run the dive and run the dive, and there's Micah Kaiser playing Mike linebacker. So, yes, you're going to make a lot of tackles. But just last week, he was nominated for what is essentially the academic Heisman. This is a guy who has majored, I believe it's in public policy at UVA, and he has his degree He's the poster child for what you want in intercollegiate athletics.
Well, that's one we'll be definitely keeping an eye on Saturday, 3:30 kickoff on ESPNU. Notre Dame, you thought it was going to be close against Wake Forest on Saturday. You thought it could be a trap game.
Yeah.
And it was a 21-point lead at the half, but Wake certainly came back and made it somewhat competitive.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they got a late touchdown, I guess, to make the final margin. What was it, 11 points? Mm-hmm. I was surprised that Wake scored more than 30 points against the Fighting Irish. But, man, Saturday night for Miami Virginia Tech was as wild a game night atmosphere in South Florida that I can certainly recall since they left the old Orange Bowl.
Really?
I mean, that place was jumping, and it's going to be, I would think, even better this weekend for Notre Dame. So I can't believe I'm hearing myself say this, but Miami's going to have a serious home field advantage Saturday night. I think the place is going to be electric, and Notre Dame running the football, and Miami's defense last week was much better than it had been, especially against the run. The Hokies really couldn't get anything going after Trayvon McMillan goes for 12 yards on the first carry, and then nothing rest of the game.
That game, I know we're a few decades away from it, but it was a pretty heated rivalry in the 80s, right?
Catholics and convicts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was as good as it gets. And Notre Dame is the last team to beat Miami.
Yes.
Beat them last October in South Bend, and the Hurricanes have since won 13 straight, which is the bowl subdivision's longest current streak.
Well, if you're so inclined, ESPN has a 30 for 30 on the rivalry that took place in the 80s, so if you want some pregame research, you can find the Catholics and Convicts documentary.
I'll bet that gets unearthed on replay. I'm sure they'll show it again
this
week.
Yes. That game was also interesting, I think maybe to the benefit of Notre Dame, by Josh Adams not playing in the second half. So they had to, not that Brennan Wimbush hasn't been good for them, mm-hmm. but he took over. And so that really, I think, opens up their offense.
It does, and he is the multi-dimensional quarterback that so many college programs want these days. And he's getting better throwing the football, and they're going to have to be balanced on Saturday if they're going to beat Miami, and that's one of Miami's strengths. I think Miami's total offense run-pass ratio against Virginia Tech was within 5 yards of being dead perfect. It was almost like 215 and 215. I'm off by a couple yards because I don't have the box score in front of me, but it was right around there.
I think Miami, I mean, you agree, you think very highly of Mark Richt.
Yes.
I saw him up close for a long time
at Georgia.
I don't think there's any question that he was going to have success at Miami. And I'm not at all surprised that it's happened this quickly and at this level.
I'm a little surprised at this quickly, but Miami's not back. This is not vintage
right.
80s or 90s.
It's not swaggery Miami.
No, and it's not like Warren Sapp is out there or Michael Irvin's at wideout or
Edrin James.
Yeah, or Willis McGahee.
Right, McGahee.
And those types.
Ed Reed.
Oh, yeah. Just amazing talent back in the day. But they have always recruited well and have a great recruiting base down there in Florida. But now coaching has caught up to recruiting at Miami.
And if these things matter, and I don't think they matter a lot, but they matter some. I think Miami is right now in the top three recruiting classes in the country.
Yes, they are, behind Penn State and Ohio State, according to Rivals.
And with an early signing period that's coming up, you don't have to worry about as much craziness. I think that's going to limit the craziness that happens in January and February.
If you can get most of your commits signed early, yeah. That's I mean, it's hard on coaches because you're trying to secure your recruiting classes. Oh, by the way, I'm trying to prepare for Notre Dame as well. I imagine especially a lot of assistant coaches have the sleeping bags in the offices sure. these days.
But if you have, I mean, I know this can go both ways. You can make an argument for both sides of this. But if you're a coach that has a pretty good class locked up, in the past, you go from December to January, no one's playing football, and it's recruiting 100% of the time. Now that there's a little bit of a distraction, maybe it stops a lot of the shenanigans from happening. Maybe. Now, yeah. You could argue that shenanigans are always going to happen.
And it's recruiting.
They're high school kids.
Right, and it's recruiting. So, yeah, there will always be shenanigans, but hopefully this will cut down on them.
Well, if he gets the talent to match his coaching, then they're going to be a potent force for years to come.
I agree. I think what we saw last week with Miami and Virginia Tech playing in November – with serious division, conference, and maybe even national implications. I think as long as Richt and Fuente are around, I think that could become standard fare.
And I do think that there may be, and you may disagree with me on this, are four jobs, just off the top of my head, that are stop jobs. This is the highest level that you're going to go. Florida State, Clemson, Miami, maybe Virginia Tech. Like, if you hit the upper echelon at Miami, you're not looking to jump somewhere else.
Well, Mark Richt's a Miami alum.
Right.
He's 58 years right. old. This is clearly
his
it
stop.
For him.
Yes.
Yes.
If you're, you know, if you win a national championship at Clemson, why would you leave? Same with Florida State, obviously. All the resources there. And you've talked about, you know, the profile and the tenor that Justin Fuente has could lead him to stay at Virginia Tech for a long time. I think everybody else in the ACC, I mean, if you have a lot of success, it's a springboard possibility to somewhere else, at least right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair, although I don't think, you know, I think Bronco Mendenhall at age 51, I think he probably looks at UVA as a destination gig. But yeah, could you see a Dave Doran or a Larry Fedora? After, you know, obviously not after this season,
but Dino Babers, all those, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I think certainly they could be on the radar of other schools.
I have no doubt in my mind if Louisville had backed up this season with what they've done the past few years, Bobby Petrino would be, you know, looking
absolutely with Tom Jurich gone, no question.
If
and he's still maybe looking,
right?
Whether others are looking back at him is probably the bigger question.
Right. If Paul Johnson didn't have that offense as kind of a counterweight to him, he probably would have been getting bites over the past few years. I know that a lot of bigger schools aren't exactly running to having the triple option. But I think, yeah, Mark Richt isn't leaving Miami. It's his alma mater. He's an older guy, and he can recruit like crazy down there, and he can win.
Yeah, and he's got his kid on the staff, too.
Yep.
Family affair.
All right, we've gone a little far off into the distance, but we like to do that. NC State Clemson. There's a little bad blood there, isn't there?
I'm not sure what Dave Doran's thinking about going there with the laptop thing. I mean, just handle it internally if there's anything to it. And, oh, by the way, there wasn't anything to it from all accounts. And, yeah, I know you're a little salty about a couple calls. I thought, having looked at the replay on the illegal shift that overturned the late pass down inside the five when NC State's driving for a potential tying touchdown, that was the right call. I mean, he clearly moved back, and you know the official drops the flag. But oh yeah. Almost like he was thinking there was some espionage or whatever, and just stop. And then, you know, Dabo came right back at him this week at his press conference. And hey, bad blood's good. That's what rivalries are made of. And this is 2 years in a row where that game has had a really compelling ending. And you know, good on Clemson to go on the road and
yeah.
Pull that off.
The last time they were on the road, I mean, maybe they've had a road game since then, but they didn't, you know, they didn't have Syracuse. Such a great trip right. up to New York.
Yeah, no, that was their most recent road game prior.
I think you have to be very careful when you, it's the old tugging on Superman's cape thing. Mm-hmm. It's fine if you're the big dog and you create some bad blood down, but when you're the team that's punching up, you don't want to give the big dog any more incentive.
Well, when you're the underdog, I think sometimes that's the attitude you have to take. I remember when Rick Barnes was the basketball coach at Clemson, going literally nose to nose with Dean Smith at center court, arguing over some physical play. And, you know, that's how Mike Krzyzewski went after Dean Smith when he first got to Duke. You know, they were aggressive about it. And, hey, if I'm Dave Doran, yes, I want to take an aggressive approach. But the way he did it with the whole laptop thing, where he was implying that there was some cheating going on, that's not the way to do it.
You've been around most of these coaches at media days and press conferences. I only have seen him on the sideline. He looks like a very fiery individual.
Yes, he does, and I'm sure in practices he is the same.
Florida State finally gets back on the winning road with what we talked about months ago was give the ball. Eventually, they're going to just feed the ball to Cam Akers.
Yeah, 199 yards, I think it was.
Two touchdowns.
Two long touchdowns, yeah. If I recall correctly. We were watching a little bit. Of that game on Saturday, because that was an early, I think, 12:20 ACC Network game. But, you know, that got hairy late for the Seminoles. And I'm not sure what Dino Babers was thinking. I think he's an excellent coach, but I believe it was right at the end of the half where they had like a 4th-and-3 or a 4th-and-4 in the red zone, and they disdained a chip shot field goal. I'm like, why?
Yeah,
and cost them because they did not score, and that kind of affected strategy late. And now Florida State has conveniently rescheduled the Louisiana Monroe game, so now there's some wiggle room. They can afford one more setback and still become bowl eligible.
Well, Clemson will hand them that one setback.
I would think that's this week in Death Valley, and that would clinch the Atlantic Division for the Tigers.
And so, say Florida State loses that game, which we expect, right? Mm-hmm. Then they lose to Florida. What will the attendance be
for a
Louisiana Monroe game on Championship Saturday with nothing to play for?
Wow. I can't see Florida State losing to Florida, but...
Would that be the lowest attended game
since yes.
the start of the Bobby Bowden era at Florida State?
It would be. There would be no one there. That would be a family and friends thing. And maybe even the friends wouldn't show up. Maybe just moms and dads.
Yeah, there was an old joke that when I was growing up, the Braves were when they were so bad in the 80s. If you showed up early enough, maybe you could play.
Yeah, very true.
All right, we'll quick run through this week's games, at least the one. There's a lot of them, so we'll make a quick run through. Then we'll talk about the bowl playoff rankings.
Sure.
And maybe I'll you know what? Before we get into this week's ACC games, I wanted to ask you about this week's James Madison Richmond game.
Yeah, I'm going to actually write about it a little bit here in a few minutes. But JMU owns Division I's longest winning streak at 21 games. And the most remarkable part of that, and that's really exceptional and extraordinary, but the last 15 of those wins have been by double-digit margins. I mean, no one has come within a single score of them. And 6 of those 15 opponents, by the way, including all 4 in the playoffs last year, nationally ranked. I mean, they 2 weeks ago on homecoming, they have number 17 New Hampshire in town and win 21-0. But the last team to come within one score of JMU is Richmond.
I'm guessing the Spiders.
It's the Spiders. 47-43 last year. Heck of a game. And then the year before that, Richmond beat JMU on the day that game day first came to Harrisonburg, I think the final, and that game was 59-49. You know, the game Saturday, two terrific quarterbacks in Kyle LaLetta, for Richmond and Brian Shore for James Madison. But I think where the difference will be is JMU's defense. I mean, they lead the nation, well, FCS, in I think it's six defensive categories, including scoring defense, total defense, and takeaways. They're 9-0, and they have 26 takeaways.
Wow.
Do the math. That's three a game, essentially. That is, and in the game I saw them up at William & Mary, they had six takeaways and turned them into 33 points. That's ruthless.
I think one of the really interesting things about FCS is the runs that programs have. North Dakota State just came off a long run.
Five straight, which JMU ended last year in the semifinals.
In dominant fashion. Georgia Southern had, you know, a nice run.
Appalachian State.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me how, because, you know, I know the upper echelon of FCS programs can get pretty good high school players.
And they get transfers.
They do. It's really interesting to me how the teams that aren't in power overcome a team that's on a run like that. And, you know, how much coaching matters the lower you get, the farther down you get, because you can't rely on great, great players recruiting to overcome bad coaching.
Yeah, and it's SOP for a coach each week to say of the opponent, they are well coached. But in listening to Russ Huseman, the Spiders coach this week, he went above and beyond with JMU and Mike Houston and his staff. And he said, I'm telling you, this is among the best coached teams I have seen. Now, Russ used to work with a lot of these JMU assistants because they were all together at Richmond under Dave Clawson and Mike London. Jeff Hansen, the defensive line coach, is one example, whom Russ Huseman said is one of the best in the business at coaching the D-line. But if you can win at the Citadel, which Mike Houston did, now granted for only two seasons, he's clearly got some X and O chops and some motivational skills. And what's his record now at JMU? They were 14-1 last year. He's 23-1.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
That works.
It does work. All right. Let's jump back to the ACC.
Sure.
Thursday night, UNC at Pitt.
A huge game if Pitt has any chance to become bowl eligible. Pitt needs two more wins and closes against Virginia Tech and Miami. So maybe even a moot point. But absolutely has to win Thursday night.
Right, 4-5, need a win. They'll surely get it, I think.
Yeah, they're playing at home. They should win.
NC State at Boston College. That game is interesting.
Absolutely. BC won in Raleigh last year. BC coming off a bye. NC State's lost two emotional games in a row. I'm all about the Eagles this week.
It's going to be cold up in Boston. And, you know, the thing about the Eagles are they're not the team that we kind of mocked a little bit earlier in the season.
No,
they played solid football.
No, they're playing really well, and their best players are young now. They really are, especially on offense. Now, you talk about A.J. Dillon, and you talk about Anthony Brown. Those are two freshmen.
Yeah.
And no, they've got it going on. They've won two straight. They're one victory away. I think I'm right on that from bowl eligibility.
Yeah, 4-5, 5-4.
Sorry. Yeah, so one more and they'll be in postseason. I think they're going to beat State.
State's 3-point favorites, so that'd be a 6 on a neutral field, right?
Yeah,
that's a tough one. You know, the last 3 weeks, or last three games, they scored 45 at Louisville,
mm-hmm.
41 at UVA,
yep.
35 against the Seminoles. And the defensive effort has gotten better each week. Maybe you're right. That's a noon kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
I'm like,
I'll take the Wolfpack.
All right.
I'll take the Wolfpack. Duke at Army. Army has really turned things around since Jeff Mockins come there.
He absolutely has done that. And this, believe it or not, now back in the day, bowl bids were much more scarce. But this will be only the second time in Army history that the cadets will go to bowls in consecutive seasons.
He is from the Paul Johnson coaching tree.
Yep.
And is a guy who, if you're willing to take the stab at having that offense,
which the service academies traditionally are.
Yes, they will. He was the coach of Georgia Southern the first year. Or he was Georgia Tech's offensive coordinator. Had a role. I guess Paul Johnson's the offensive coordinator in Atlanta. But had a big role in that offense. He went to Georgia Southern and was really good for 3 years when they were still in the FCS. Mm-hmm. And went to the semifinals 3 years with him.
Yep.
And then was there for their transition year into the FBS. And that he went 4-8 the first year at Army, then set back 2-10. They were 8-5 last year. 7-2, and they have Navy left for the Commander in Chief Trophy, right?
Yes.
And they won it last year.
Yes, right? because they ended the losing streak against Navy last year. They had lost 14 or 15 in a row to the Midshipmen, and came back and won. And this game is at West Point.
It is. And they're Duke's 3-point favorites.
Yeah, and Duke really needs a win for bowl purposes. I think Duke will win, but I have absolutely no faith in the pick. Duke has beaten Army each of the last two seasons.
Duke has lost 5 in a row.
Yeah.
That's a lot for what is generally a well-coached football team.
Mm-hmm. And the struggles, as we've mentioned before, the struggles have been on the offensive side, which is not what you expect from David Cutcliffe.
Right. They've scored in their losses 6 against Miami, 21 against UVA, but then 10, 17, and 3 in the last 3 games. Yeah. It's not what you'd expect, but they've had some struggles at quarterback for sure.
Yeah, Daniel Jones has had a subpar sophomore year.
All right, you will be down in Atlanta with Norm at the Virginia Tech-Georgia Tech game. It's still, I think, a very intriguing matchup, and I still think both teams are good football teams.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech's record certainly doesn't indicate that.
Nope.
But I do think they're still a good football team that's capable of beating almost anyone except for Georgia and Clemson on their schedule.
Yeah, and Virginia Tech, I believe, has won the last 3 and 5 of the last 6 in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Yes.
Last year, they lost in Blacksburg, and it was, a couple touchdowns?
No, it was close. It was a late touchdown, and it was a late touchdown or a late field goal, but it was, in my mind, by far the worst loss of Virginia Tech's season. Yes, I know they were 3 touchdown favorites at Syracuse and lost. But the Hokies were playing at home against Georgia Tech's backup quarterback, and Virginia Tech lost. To me, it was the most baffling result of the Hokie season. I certainly think they remember it, and I think the Hokies are good. And oh, by the way, Justin Fuente has not lost back-to-back games at Virginia Tech, and I don't think they're about to start on Saturday.
If Tech would have beaten Virginia... Georgia Tech, sorry. If Georgia Tech would have beaten Virginia, I would have picked Georgia Tech, but there's a slide happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Virginia Tech wins.
I do too.
And I think Georgia Tech beats Duke, and they lost a game, right? Because they lost Central Florida.
Yes.
So they got to get 2 more.
Not going to happen because they're not going to beat Georgia.
They're not beating Georgia for sure.
No.
So that's an intriguing subplot to that game. Wake Forest is up in Syracuse. I like the Deacons, even though Syracuse is a favorite.
I like the Deacons to win, too, and that would make them bowl eligible.
Yep, Syracuse is at 4-5. Wake is at 5-4. Everybody in the ACC, with the exception of North Carolina, still has bowl eligibility out there, right?
Yes. Yep, 14 or 13 of the 14.
And, I mean, could they get 11 or so?
No. I actually think there's a chance, the way it falls, that they may not fill all their bids.
Because they're all playing each other.
Each other, yes.
Florida State's at Clemson. The only way Florida State has a chance is if this is their Super Bowl. They make this,
mm-hmm.
Their game. They've had a terrible season, and they put everything into this, and they get an extra human effort. I don't think it's going to happen.
I just don't think they can score enough.
I don't think they can score enough either. Virginia at Louisville. We talked about that one already. You like Virginia?
I do.
I think that line of 11.5 is ridiculous for Louisville. I don't remember if I made a pick earlier. I think maybe Lamar Jackson gets loose and it's by 3 points.
Sure, that's fair.
And then Notre Dame, Miami. I like Notre Dame.
I do too.
But you know, nothing at this point in this college football season will surprise me. Speaking of surprises, so Baltimore over the weekend with my lovely wife Jane, and settled into a adult establishment around 7:30 or so. Turned on, looked up at the bar, and saw Iowa beating the snot out of Ohio State.
How about that?
Michigan State beating Penn State, and West Virginia beating Iowa State, and at the just so happened it was at the end of Bedlam, which was a crazy game. What a wild Saturday for college football!
Right, and turned some of the playoff rankings, you know, churned them up below the top four. Top four remained the same in Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Clemson. But after that, well, and top five, actually, because Oklahoma remains five. But then churned them up a little bit, and you thought last week was crazy? Washington at Stanford Friday night. Then we've got Saturday, Georgia-Auburn, Alabama at Mississippi State. Does that get tight?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
Notre Dame-Miami, obviously.
Yeah.
And then TCU-Oklahoma.
Yeah. You think that some of these are elimination games, but I don't know. I mean, it seems to be this year there is as good a chance as any of a two-loss team getting in.
Auburn, certainly.
They have all the cards, right? If they go through Georgia and Alabama
and win the SEC championship,
they're in.
Yes,
two losses.
Because that would be two wins over Georgia, a win over Alabama, and a terrific road loss at Clemson.
Yeah, they're absolutely in.
Yeah.
If they run the table. They're not going to run the table. But if they do, they are the one right now. They have, not only do they have the cards for themselves, but they control Georgia's fate and they control Alabama's fate. I think a one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Georgia still gets in the playoff. It depends upon where the loss is.
It does. If Alabama loses in the SEC championship game,
because the schedule's not there.
Right. Depending on how the rest of it falls nationally, I think you could see Alabama left out at 12-1.
You know who's sneaking in? Just like last year's Washington.
Maybe. A lot of cards have to fall Washington's way.
I think I never would have thought before this week that a one-loss Miami team could get in, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could get in if they beat Clemson
in
the ACC championship. If their one loss is Notre Dame this week,
okay,
and they beat Clemson, I think they're back in play maybe.
Sure, they'd be in play.
Wisconsin, which is without question the weakest undefeated team in college football. Well, maybe not in college football, in the Power Five.
Right.
Iowa helps them a lot this week.
Yes.
And Northwestern is now in the top 25.
It is.
Michigan may be back in the top 25 by the time they play. I thought an undefeated Wisconsin team may, if things fell right, maybe on the outside looking in, and Iowa stepping up is going to help them, I think, if they can run the table.
Yeah, and a 13-0 Power 5 champion, That's going to be awfully difficult to leave out. But again, if the top five, if four of the top five win out, then Wisconsin's in a heap of trouble no matter what it does.
Wisconsin would, yeah, you're right. Because, well, Michigan State plays Ohio State this week, right? That's still going to get muddied, right? Like, Michigan State's ahead of Ohio State and Penn State.
Yep.
One of those teams have to lose.
Yeah.
The Big Ten, the tougher side of the Big Ten, is kind of a mess.
Yeah, cannibalized.
Yeah. And I still think those are some good football teams, and I still think they'd hold their... I would take Penn State and Ohio State right now over Washington.
So would I? Penn State's lost two games by 4 points.
I may take both of them over Miami. You know, I think they're competitive against TCU. Yeah. But, yeah, it's crazy. It is going to be a wild last few weeks. Now, I know this can't happen.
Okay.
But UCF is undefeated. There's too far behind, too many two-loss teams to jump high enough. But if they would have played that game against Georgia Tech earlier in the season, and South Florida would still be undefeated, they would have closed with South Florida, a win over an undefeated South Florida team, and then a win over a good Memphis team, and had the Georgia Tech team. And that's all woulda, shoulda, coulda. But I think they would have presented
They would have. I mean, clearly they would have gotten the group of fives bid to a New Year's Six game, which this year will end up being the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. But I with just a four-team playoff, I still think it's going to be the sole ownership of the Power Five.
Yeah, I think you're right. But they are Scott Frost, we've talked about it a couple weeks ago, is certainly an interesting candidate for any team that has any big Power Five school that has an opening.
And there's going to be a bunch of them.
There is. And you know, another guy who has done a lot with little is Dan Mullen at Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm. And he's been shopping himself
for a while.
He has. Dan Mullen wanted the Virginia Tech job.
Really?
Oh yes, he did.
He's a good football coach, and he'd be, you know, there's the natural...
He's high maintenance.
Is he?
Yes.
There's the natural fit at Florida, but from what I remember reading, Jeremy Foley, and he did not have the best relationship.
Okay, and Jeremy Foley, though, just in an emeritus role at Florida, apparently still has considerable influence.
He does. If someone takes Dan Mullen, I think he'll win there, but... Yeah, maybe there is a little extra to that. Friday night, college hoops kicks off for the most part. Any games this weekend that you're looking at?
The games this weekend are meh. They just don't do anything for you. I mean, Virginia opens at home against UNC Greensboro. Virginia Tech's at home against Detroit Mercy. Now, next week, the games get interesting, both locally and nationally. Gosh, Duke plays Michigan State.
Yeah, that's that four of the top, six or seven teams in the country are playing?
Yeah, and then it's a doubleheader in Chicago, Duke, Michigan State, followed by Kansas and Kentucky next Tuesday night. And then a week Friday is when UVA plays at VCU in, for a newspaper guy, a wonderful 4 p.m.
Oh, deadline.
Matinee.
How many times have they played up there?
Once.
How long ago was that?
3 years ago, I want to say. Something like that. Virginia went in there and housed them.
Yeah.
I mean, shot like a school record 68%.
Wow.
Yeah, against Shaka Smart. And
that was his last year there?
And that crew, I believe it was. And Cavaliers aren't gonna do that on Friday the 17th, I think, if I have my dates right.
They get a 2-for-1?
No, they play them home and home.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good for Virginia.
No, I think it's great. It's a great series to play. It's a terrific road test to play in the Siegel Center. It's one of the best atmospheres that you'll find in college basketball. They've sold out, I don't know, going on maybe even more than 100 consecutive home games. Love going there. Nice, compact arena. Brand new coach for the Rams this year,
yeah.
in Mike Rhodes, former VCU assistant, former Randolph-Macon head coach, and comes after 3 seasons as the head coach at Rice, where this past year he had some really good success. So yeah, I think week after next is or week after this is when hoops will really kick in.
Last thing about that, what are some of the early things you're looking at that you're looking at with Virginia and Virginia Tech?
Well, I think with Virginia Tech, it's health. And where is Chris Clark? At what capacity is he coming back from the ACL? And also with Kerry Blackshear Jr., who is really their only imposing big man. He's 6'10", and he missed all of last year with the foot. So you want to see how they are. And I think with Virginia, you always wonder, okay, you know, who's going to score? I think it's going to be by committee. This is the first time in forever that the Cavaliers do not return a double figure score. I think Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and Devin Hall and Isaiah Wilkins, you know, they'll find some points. And then what I'm really most interested in is the redshirt freshman, because we've never seen DeAndre Hunter and Jay Huff. And I had an NBA scout tell me last year, who had been to UVA practices, those are the two best NBA prospects in this program. So Huff is a 7'1" stretch four, and Hunter is a 6'8" wing. Really eager to see them.
Well, because we'll tape this next Wednesday, Duke and I lied and said that was the last thing I was going to ask you about. But Duke and Michigan State will play on Tuesday night in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see this much ballyhooed freshman class for Duke.
Yep.
Michigan State may have the preseason player of the year.
He is, Miles Bridges.
In college basketball.
No question.
What do you think you're going to see on Tuesday night?
Izzo and Krzyzewski have had some great battles, including at the Final Four. Duke has owned Michigan State. I don't know what the series exactly is, but it is decidedly in the Blue Devils' favor. So just given that history, you would think Duke, but I think more so with Bridges and Michigan State just being a little more seasoned than Duke. Grayson Allen is the Blue Devils' only upperclassman. I think Michigan State will win.
I think it's going to be very intriguing, and you will, I know, agree with me, to see where Duke is from the first time they step on the floor to where they are in April, or, well, March, but maybe even April next year. Because that, with that many young guys, I have no doubt that they'll gel together.
They'll progress, whether they gel or not. And that's been, you know, Mike Krzyzewski's had some trouble with one and dones. And
Jabari Parker and Duke lost in the first round to Mercer.
Right, and early outs in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, lost to Lehigh with Austin Rivers as a one and done. But his most recent national championship, well, you know, with Okafor and Tyus Jones and Justice Winslow, that larger group of freshmen, he did get to gel. So I think that's the model for this season.
And this is a larger group.
Oh, it absolutely is.
With Wendell Carter and Gary Trent.
Yeah.
And Bagley.
Yeah.
It's going to be I think they're probably going to be one of the more interesting teams to college basketball. I mean, obviously, watching Duke basketball is an art itself, but watching this team, to see how those freshmen gel together, it's going to be interesting. And then Kentucky, Kansas. Kentucky's very, very young.
Very. And Coach Calipari always is pleading poverty.
yes.
But this time he's almost got me convinced. And Bill Self, they win the Big 12 every year, and will again in 2018. So I would like, in that early season of game, I would pick Kansas.
I agree. I like Duke, but I wish, I'm glad that is the first game, because, you know, the older I get, less I want to stay up till midnight to watch basketball. But I would think that should be the second game of that doubleheader.
Yeah, I was curious about that as well. And then in between that doubleheader is when they'll release the college football playoff rankings.
It'll be a fun night, and then we'll talk about it next Wednesday.
Sounds good, man.
All right, take it easy.